Hello, and welcome back to another episode of On Spec. I'm your host, Ryan Barath. Well, there it is, folks. The 2021 Masters is in the books, and congratulations to Hideki Matsuyama from Japan for winning in style. It was an exciting tournament from start to finish. We had Justin Rose leading after the first day, and after Saturday, it was a four-shot lead heading into Sunday for Hideki. And, you know, from that point on, it's one of those things where, you know, are you going to see a blowout? Are you going to see it get very interesting? How the pressure is going to affect? How is the course, pin positions? All of this stuff is all a factor in creating excitement. And we definitely got that today for the final round. And again, once again, congratulations to Hideki Matsuyama. Now we're going to talk about all of these things. We're going to talk about pressure. We're going to talk about some of the pin positions. We're going to talk about the course, weather conditions, and all that stuff. But before we do, I have to let you know that On Spec is brought to you by Titleist and the all-new Vokey SM8 wedges. Now, what's really cool about the SM8 wedges is there is CG control and variance within the wedges to help you control your spin. So, you know, when you see players hit those low spinning shots, first of all, technique is very important, but also having a wedge that gives you the opportunity to try, and when you are hitting those shots, if you happen to miss it a little bit, to still get consistent flight. Now, another part of that as well is spin. Every single wedge is checked for consistency in the grooves that they are milled to precision. And last but not least, and this is what separates Vokey wedges from basically everything else in the market, is their grind options. Now, you can go online, you can go to Titleist.com, you can go to the Vokey section, and you can find out and better understand the grind options that are available. I get a lot of questions all the time about, is this grind good for me? Is this grind good for me? They actually break down all of this. They have video, they have little pieces you can read, and it's very informative. So if you've ever been curious about what a wedge grind, what a Vokey wedge grind can do for your game based on the conditions and your swing and all of those things, you can find that out at Titleist.com. And their newest addition is the 60B, which is part of their WedgeWorks, which is their custom program. It is a low bounce version of the 60M grind, which Bob Vokey calls his most favorite grind because of its versatility. And again, you can learn more about the 60B and the rest of the SM8 line at Titleist.com. Check out the Vokey section there and find out more about the wedges that are going to fit your game. Okay, so let's get right into the action here. And so if we're talking Masters, let's go right to the beginning. Let's talk about round one. Justin Rose went out there and lit up the golf course. He was, ball striking was just impeccable. His short game, very good. And I mean, throughout the rest of the week, his short game wasn't, I mean, especially on Saturday. He basically saved himself, I feel like, six shots on the back nine there after the rain delay. Because when you think about either going back in, having time to warm up, all of those things, and then the other part of it too, and this is really interesting, and I think this is what separated what Hideki did on Saturday after the rain delay versus what some players like Justin Rose and Xander Schauffele did, was their ability to control ball flight. And, you know, it was just a little bit damp. And, you know, everyone makes fun of Bryson as the spritzer guy. But though, when you're locked into your distances, you're locked into the zone, you're playing in certain conditions, and then you come back out and the conditions change, you have to take that into account. And for Justin, he missed a couple shots that were long. I know Xander hit another one as well. And Xander was playing a draw, I think it was on 17, where he went long. And you know, look, there's a lot of things that go in, a lot of factors that go into play there. When you're hitting a draw, you're generally de-lofting the golf club a little bit more. You're creating a little bit less spin, more compression, and it just flew a little bit longer. But how much does that spin react? Because you think the one element that separates the greatest players at Augusta National, separates the players in general, they're all great players to even get there, but the one thing that separates them is the difference between a great shot and just a good shot that doesn't turn out good at all. And an example of this would be on Saturday, moving forward again, the pin position on six that was tucked in that back right corner. And you saw players, Justin Rose included, try and put up the hill, came right back down to their feet. Now, it was closer to the lip on Saturday than it was on Sunday, or closer to that edge, sorry, on that little shelf up there. But the amount of precision that it takes to get it up there, and then, okay, if you miss it, now you have a question to make. How hard do you have to hit it again to get it up there without, you know, having it roll back to your feet? which also brings in the risk of blowing it too far by. All of these things is what makes an interesting golf course even more interesting. And this is what, for a lot of people, always makes it very exciting to watch the Masters versus other tournaments. It's not that you don't get to see Pebble Beach on occasion. Every year it has the AT&T, and then every couple years, or every five, I guess 5 years, it holds a US Open. So you have that familiarity. But when it comes to the Masters, it's held the same place every single year. And you get the pin position on 16. You have the pin position on 18. You get these familiar pin positions. You have these holes where you know you're going to see swings in the score. Again, 13, 15 today was another one where Hideki came in and he hit that shot. He had a big lead and he still went for it. And that pin at the back was dangerous. So not only did he go over the green, he had to chip back up and to be able to take on that shot from where he was up that slope to a pin that looks like it's just floating above the front or second cut, I should say. To be able to do that is unbelievably difficult. And this is where great architecture showcases what you see and showcases how great players get around the golf course. And Saturday, again, was another example where I know I'm jumping back and forth here, but I'm trying to remember all the shots. I'm trying to go through my head of like what really stood out from, you know, the great, really what separated good players and good shots out there, right? And 18, Saturday, Hideki had made, I think it was like five or six birdies on the back nine. And he comes to 18 and it's out of the sand trap. So normally out of sand, a player is going to generate a little bit more spin on occasion, especially on a full swing shot. You'll see it too, I know, for average or amateur golfers or recreational players trying to hit a 100-yard shot or 120-yard shot from the sand. I mean, even if there's no lip, becomes very difficult, becomes a very scary, very scary shot to even try and attempt. A lot of players are just going to play out or, you know, but when you watch the best players in the world hit these shots, they're actually very comfortable hitting them because there's no grass behind their ball. They can absolutely control spin. And for Hideki to hit a shot up that hill out of the sand, it was firm. So that helped get the ball a little bit further back from the lip and just to see him blast it way over the green on 18. And he had the big lead already. He was, I think, one of the last groups coming in. And now you're thinking to yourself, okay, he hit it, what, 15 yards over the green? And how is he going to get this up and down? And not only did he just get it up and down, he hit it to, like, I don't know, less than 2 feet. And I remember sitting there, and this is what makes the tournament exciting, is the fact that you have these, oh my gosh, how's he going to recover? And then they recover. Or, you know, it doesn't always happen. But that's the idea of it presents you with the challenge, but the opportunity to recover. Now, if you don't hit a great shot, well, then, of course, you're not going to recover and you're going to start falling down that leaderboard very quickly. But what is so fascinating about the way the players played, especially, again, on Saturday evening and on Sunday, was just how mistakes can get amplified. So, again, you saw it on 16 with Xander, hit the shot into the water. Then Hideki had the opportunity to go second because he made the bogey on 15 to, okay, well, the person who is the closest to me right now, I don't have to go for that pin. Yes, it's fun. It's in the bowl. You can play to your shot dispersion. But you know what? Because of this, I'm going to aim a little bit further right, put it up there. If it feeds down, great. If it doesn't, well, now I just have the opportunity to potentially two-putt, make my par. He did make the three-putt, so he still made a bogey there. But the person he was playing with made a triple. So now you've got this back and forth where, you know, the person you were playing directly against lost more shots than you did on that hole. And then Will Zalatoris was coming up the final hole, or I think he might have already finished or is close to finishing at that point. And so you've got this back and forth. And that's also, too, what makes, from an entertainment perspective, if we're just talking about it from an excitement and what you get to watch during the tournament, is a player that could be five or six groups ahead from the final group could make an eagle and a birdie on 13 and 15. And maybe they make another, maybe they hit another one close on 16 and they make another birdie. Well, at this point, you now have that person has played these holes that give you a scoring opportunity if you are hitting it, obviously, in the proper spots. But the person who is technically or maybe was leading the tournament or is in the final group hasn't played that yet. So you see the leaderboard, you see these ups and downs very quickly, but at the end, they all have to play 17 and 18, which can become extremely difficult. And at the end of the day, it is the cumulative 72 hole score. I think someone mentioned Jordan made a triple. If you looked at the triple and like one other double that he made, he would have been like obviously a lot higher up the leaderboard. And so these things stand out. And this is why, first of all, in a major championship or in any tournament, every single shot matters. Every single time you stand over it, you can't lose your focus. You have to go through your process. And I think for Hideki, he just stuck to it over and over and over again. And you know, it's not very often I can sit there and be like, you know, four-shot lead is captivating. But a four-shot lead in a way is almost, depending on the player, depending on who's chasing, is even more captivating because it's like a lead in hockey, right? Yeah. So there you go. Hockey reference, of course. Because, you know, okay, you're cruising at this point. You're leading by three or four goals and you're just cruising. Well, all of a sudden, the opposing team scores a goal. Okay, you got your two-shot lead. That's fine. Or two-goal lead. That's fine. Still feeling pretty good about it. You know, but, you know, gripping the stick a little tighter. Every shift, you're trying to get into their end. You're trying to, you know, keep the pressure on. But you got the two-shot lead. Two-goal lead, sorry. I'm going back and forth here. Then you get, okay, then they score again. Now it's one. And then everything gets moving real quickly, very fast. Because you put yourself in a position to almost relax. And that's why for Hideki, it was impressive to see throughout the day him just keep pushing. And the one thing that really separated him, not only was his putting and his pitching was beautiful, his pitching and chipping was just unbelievable, but his ball striking has always been good. Now, you can go to golfwx.com. It was a couple weeks ago. I don't want to say it was Bay Hill. It was a little week. I think it was just after Bay Hill. He was on the putting green, and he had like five or six putters. We had some interesting photos on the site. We had a whole thread in the forums about, look at all the putters Hideki's testing. And the one thing that I think is very interesting, and I made a comment on it. Again, you can find this all at the Golf WRX forums, is the style of putter didn't really change. He's always been into that Answer 2, Newport 2 style putter, with the, you know, plumber's neck, square bumpers. Some have had a sight line, some have had a dot at the top, some have been completely bare as far as the top line and flange goes over time and through testing. But for him to stick with that style obviously shows a confidence in what he was using. Now, every single putter will always have slight variances. And I know that for some people, they're going to stick with the style no matter what. Hideki, I believe, is one of those golfers where he's tried a lot of different putters, but he sticks to that same one or sticks to that same style. I know for myself, I've gone all over the map. I have some mallet-style putters, and I know if you look at the tour numbers, mallet-style putters continue to grow in popularity just because they do. They offer higher MOI. They can offer a lot more technology as far as forgiveness and roll when you think about some of the inserts that they offer. But for some people, having confidence in the putter and creating, it's all about creating dynamics. So if you have good dynamics, you can create good dynamics with basically any putter. It doesn't matter. But, you know, what these big putters do is create extra stability, just like a bigger driver, right? But, you know, if you have a smaller driver, you can still, you know, hit great numbers with it. It just might be a little more difficult to hit that center shot, right? But anyway, so for Hideki to stick with that putter style and just continue to work on it and continue to work on it was, it's pretty interesting to see because he has historically not been a great putter. His ball striking has always been just a stellar part of his golf game. And I've heard coaches say it. I've heard other people who talk about golf say it. And that is, ball striking is something that good players don't generally really lose. And you can go look at some of the ball striking stats from, you know, any number of years ago. And you'll see a lot of players that are up there were almost always continuously up there. But where they struggle, or is it usually a different part of their game? Sometimes it's driving, sometimes it's short game, sometimes it's putting. And for people like, say, another good example would be Sergio. Sergio at one point was very highly ranked as far as his putting was concerned. His putting stats were really good. But, you know, the closer you hit it more often, the more birdie putts you get, you're not going to make them all. And then, you know, does it get into your head? I'm not capitalizing on these opportunities. Well, it's also because you're not chipping and pitching around the greens. You're actually hitting it on the greens. Your greens and regulation up. Your stroke gained is better off the on your approach, but then maybe you can lose it on your putting, right? So all of these things play a factor. And to see him, especially over the last couple of weeks, really improve his putting, come out there, I felt it was, you know, other than that one on 16, pretty confident with seeing him stand over these like mid-length putts where before didn't have that. And I just think it was really exciting. And the one thing too that I really enjoyed was, and I don't always felt this way, and other people actually mentioned this on Twitter. You can follow me along at RDSBrath on Twitter and Instagram, same handle. You can follow the show along as well at OnSpecWRX. But for me, to see that, first of all, he was very excited to win. I know a lot of people talked about being the first male professional golfer to win a major for a Japanese male golfer to win a major championship. There we go. Sorry about that. And it was, I'm not saying I was emotional, but it was like to appreciate what that means to a country, I thought was really cool. Because for us, I am Canadian, as I've mentioned, and most people, if you listen to the show, you probably figure that out by now. But to see that happen as a Canadian, I got to watch Mike Weir as a kid. And I know for me, I remember where I was. I remember the shots going into it. I remember the playoff, like shot for shot, and how exciting that was. And I still remember it as an adult now, because it was exciting. It was such a big deal to see someone come from a smaller country that has golf as a seasonal sport. It's not something we ever really excelled in. I know there's been players like George Knudsen, and a lot of people talk about Mo Norman. But for Mike, he had played well for a very long time on tour. He was in the top 10. I think at some point he was into the top 5 in the world. And to see him come out and play and be this person that kind of basically inspired a nation of people to go out and play golf. And we've always had a very high per capita golfer number, but it definitely jumped. There was this bump when Mike Weir won. Everyone wanted to talk about Mike Weir's Masters win. And that same effect is going to happen, if it hasn't already happened, in Japan because of Hideki winning. And I think that's a really important thing to factor in. Not only you had the Anwa winner also from Japan. And this is like, again, now this becomes a really fun stat that people are going to follow, is first time they had the Anwa, an American winner won for the Anwa and the Masters. And now we had a Japanese winner, Anwa and Masters. What does this mean for the future? I don't know. But it makes for an interesting story. It makes for a very fun stat, very small number of data points in this, but it still is very interesting to follow along. And, you know, again, to be able to talk about, and it was talked about a lot on the telecast, and like golf, and we've had people talk about golf in like South Korea and Japan. Golf is a massive sport in Asia. Huge. Like, I don't think most people comprehend in North America how popular that sport is, because you can go and find indoor golf places all over the place, and you can find golf stores all over the place. They love equipment. They love the sport. They love there's like lifestyle brands that are behind the sport. And you talk about a lot of brands that sell to North America and then sell to the Japanese and South Korean market. It's very different because it's not just a game. It comes down to being very much like a lifestyle thing. You see lifestyle brands from companies like Titleist and Strixon and Callaway, because they're golf crazy. And you know, I'm not saying that North America isn't golf crazy. Canadians, again, have one of the highest per capita golfers in the world. And I think, I could be wrong on this, but I remember hearing a stat, it's like Wisconsin or North Dakota has like the most golf courses per capita for their state. And that's not a warm weather climate golf all year round. That is a winter time. It is cold as all heck. It's going to be cold out. And then you have the summertime, and that's because you don't get it all year round. It becomes this thing where you want to do it even more. And it's funny because I've talked to people in Florida. And I'm like, oh, you work at a golf store in Florida. It must be crazy all the time. And he goes, no, there's ebbs and flows like everything else throughout the season, because it's available all the time and people just sometimes forget about it. You know, you have really nice weather. Sometimes people don't want to go to the golf course. They want to go to the beach. They want to do other things, because at some point, especially when it's like really hot and humid in the summer times, well, you know, unless you play really early or you play later in the evening, golf courses aren't really busy. They're just not, unless you're just a complete nut. So there's all of these factors that come into play. And that's what I think for me, it's what kept me glued to my seat, because it was exciting. Because there, and another great example of this was Australia, right? Adam Scott winning. I know a lot of people think, when they think about Masters, they think of Australia. They think of Greg Norman and famously never winning one. But for Adam Scott to win and have a whole country be like, this is, you know, we have that person that we can look up to as a shining example of someone that came from our country and succeeded at the highest level at the most famous golf tournament in the world. And I think that's really cool to be able to say congratulations to Hideki and Japanese golf, because golf has always had this weird back and forth with, like, you know, who are golfers, where are golf. I mean, it's just this thing where we think of golf and we think of country clubs and, you know, we think of like one type of person, but golf really is played by everybody. And it's exciting to see, like, you talk about age groups, you talk about, we had it last week with the drive, chip and putt as well. You saw all kinds of kids out there who are working very hard to play great golf, and to be able to have that for somebody else. Cause again, I feel as a Canadian, I know, like, being witness to junior golf around the time of Mike Weir, as like growing up, it got busier, got way busier. More kids that I played hockey with or did other things or skateboarded with or whatever, like, they asked about playing golf. They were curious about playing golf because it was something where you have this other person to look up to. And I think with Hideki's win, it's going to do that. And what's even more exciting is we have the Summer Olympics in Tokyo. So, you know, if Hideki wasn't already famous, he is now very, very famous. And I think a lot more people are going to pay attention to him, as they should, and watch him play golf, because it is a spectacular golf swing and just golf game to watch all around. Now, of course, this would not be a Golf WRX podcast without talking about what's in the bag. So let's go through Hideki's bag and just talk our way through some of his gear, because I think this is a pretty interesting one. Now, the other part of this too is you can actually go back and you can check it out at golfwrx.com. There's this really great deep dive on Hideki's golf bag, because again, if you've ever checked out the Golf WRX forums and you ever go from tournament week to tournament week, there is not a player on the PGA Tour that tests more stuff and more golf shafts and goes back and forth throughout his bag just as part of his process than Hideki. He has all kinds of stuff on the range. He's got all kinds of shafts in the bag. He's got drivers, he's got driver heads, wedges. It's a smorgasbord. It's insane. And again, a couple weeks ago, had like 6 or 7 putters on the putting green. He was trying to find one. Obviously, he found one that worked very well. But, you know, there's other players that have gone through this. Like, they're always testing. They're always trying to figure it out. Rory Sabatini is another player who is notorious for testing and tinkering and those all. And, you know, in some cases, for some players, it can become paralysis by analysis. I've witnessed it as a golfer and as someone who, you know, does fittings and club building, that I've had players come back. We see great numbers. They go out and it's like, something's not working. And then you go back out and you figure it out. And you give them new specs and it's like 9 holes later and they're giving you a call. It's like, I don't know, something feels wrong about this one golf club. And, you know, it can be a wormhole for some people. And some cases it's a good thing. In other cases, it can be so analytical and over the top that, you know, you are going to struggle depending on skill level, perception versus what you're actually doing is another part of like what you can see when you're doing testing with equipment. But, you know, you'll always see Hideki out there with golf shafts and with his TrackMan, because, you know, if you are going to go through this process of testing equipment and finding out what's right in your bag, fitting and having data is so valuable in understanding what's working, why it's working, and how, if something's not working, how to fix it. So let's quickly go through Hideki's bag because I think it's a fun one here. And that is, we'll start with the driver. He drove it really well all week. And I mean, I think on 18, he just pumped that one. And I was thinking, like, that to me was like the statement, because came off 17, walking 18th. Okay, look, man, just all you got to do is just get it in that fairway and get it up there and you're going to win. And he did that. He just literally just smashed that driver down the middle. And what driver was it? It was a Srixon ZX5. Now, what's also fascinating about his driver, especially when we talk about club head speed and you talk about players picking up speed and going to lighter weight clubs, well, for Hideki, his driver shaft's actually a DI8. So that's a pretty heavy driver shaft. There's not a lot of players on tour playing an 80-gram shaft in their driver. A lot of them play it in their fairwoods. But to see it in a driver is not completely, I wouldn't say unusual, but it's not very usual. It's not very common. So I think it fits his tempo well. I think it's part of what this is where club fitting plays such an important role. But it's being able to find the club that works for you. And again, for Hideki, you know, it's ZX5 driver with a very heavy golf shaft that happens to fit in perfectly. Now, the other clubs in his bag, he's got a couple that aren't from Srixon. One is the TaylorMade Sim 2 Titanium. He's got a Graphite Design Tour AD TP9TX. Again, these are pretty heavy golf shafts, but they happen to fit his tempo very well. He had been using the Sim Max in the past that didn't have the adjustable hosel, but he has gone to the Sim 2 Titanium and, you know, obviously hit that very well too. Now, another club he had is the Sim UDI. Now, there is the DHY, which is the one that has a little bit bigger, a little bit more offset, wider sole. He's got the standard UDI. And in that, he has a True Temper Elevate Tour X100. Again, Elevate Tour has the VSS in it, vibration suppression system, a little bit higher launch. And that's kind of what you want, a utility. Unless, if we're using your utility as an approach club, and it's great to have a shaft that you can, that's going to help a little bit with launching a little higher. But for him, because he doesn't carry a 5-wood, doesn't carry any type of 7-wood, then he goes right to his 4-iron. This is a golf club where I don't know how much he really uses it off the tee. I think it does become an approach shot. But again, a lot of these guys don't hit that club for an approach very often because it's just not a distance that they encounter on the golf course because they're driving it so darn far. Now, his irons. This is where it gets really curious, and this is where I think I wanted to talk about more in depth. Because he is so, he's very meticulous with his specs. He uses Srixon, the Z-forged or Z-forged irons. I say Z because I'm Canadian, but it's the Z-forged irons, Florida pitching wedge, S-400s. Now, if you look at his driver and you look at the other club in his bag, he's got TX or even in his driving iron, X-100. He's got these very stiff golf shafts. But in his irons, he's got softer S400s. Like, okay, well, why? Well, it's because of the dynamics and the speed. It's not just about speed. It's about acceleration. And this is when people ask about driver shafts fitting them or fairway shafts fitting them or certain shafts fitting their golf swing. The one question that you have to ask yourself is like, oh, I swing at 100 miles an hour. Let's just say that's a question I get all the time. I swing at 100 and 105 miles an hour. What driver shaft should I use? Okay, well, that's just like, that's a long question. There's a lot to answer and break down from that, right? Like, what are you trying to accomplish? What's your shot shape? You know, what's your tempo like? How do you achieve this speed? Because there are different ways to do it. Hideki, wonderfully smooth tempo. And for him, he uses something that works for him to create great dynamics that fits the way it feels. Maybe feels the way it loads or unloads. I've never talked to him about it. But again, you can go to the Golf Directs. There's a great article on like breaking this down. And it's a very custom set. We work really hard with the sole grinds and his iron shaping. And you know, as someone who is always tinkering and working on their gear, to be able to have something, again, obviously being able to have very custom stuff. You know, we talked earlier this week, people talked about Bryson's custom driver. But end of the week, you know, it's about chipping and putting and ball striking, all of those things as well. And Hideki did it great, and he did it with those Srixon Z-forged blade irons. Have a bit of a unique sole grind compared to some of the other stuff, but again, he's a unique player, he's a tour player, and he can tell the difference between how something's going through the turf, and because of that, he gets special treatment. Now, the other part, which, again, I love Hideki's gear. I think it's just everything that works for him. But this is where it becomes very unique, is for going from the irons to the wedges. Irons, S400 shafts. wedges. Now the 52, which is a gap wedge, something I promote all the time, is matching your gap wedge shaft to your irons because it is a full swing golf club. But then you get into his sand and lob wedge. He actually uses X100s, which is the exact opposite of how I almost fit every golfer. Usually you go a little bit softer, a little bit heavier in those shorter clubs. But for him, he actually goes slightly lighter, talking a few grams, not a big deal, and stiffer. Now for him, he has said it's about flighting his wedges. And if you go to, again, we have his What's in the Bag at golfwrx.com. You can see the sole grinds. They're very custom forged RTX wedges from Cleveland. And man, they look so good. I think they're really cool looking. I love that. It does have that big C grind to it. He has a leading edge grind as well. And I think the two shots that stand out was the shot on 18 on Saturday when he put himself behind the green. And I was just like, God, that's a tough spot to be in. Not exactly short-sighted, but short-sighted. And to put it where he did, I thought, okay, like the man's rolling right now. He's got a hot hand. He's just going to keep going because could be a huge momentum killer. I know a lot of people, you know, you're going to finish your day off. You're going to go home. You're going to eat dinner. You're going to go to bed, try and sleep on the lead of the Masters and then come back. But to know that you like, you know, put myself in not a great spot, although I feel like I hit a good shot to get there, get up and down, feeling real confident, going to bed that night, could have been very different. And then also the shot on 15 on Sunday, because he hit the shot over the green, hit that draw in there, and it just kept going. And I felt like I was grinding my teeth when he hit that second shot. And I was like, no, it's not going to stop. That looked really hard. He hit that really fast. It's coming in hot. And it just kept rolling. Ended up behind the green in the water. And then now you have that, like I said earlier, that pin that looks like it's just sitting, floating there from where you are below the green surface, hitting up that where the fringe is like cut very short. And to hit it just up there, just on the top to get to that, be able to putt that, was still an impressive shot. You think, oh, he didn't even get it on the green. Well, you know, it's not just about how close you get it. It's also where you put it, especially at Augusta. And he's able to do that. And last but not least is his putter, which is a Newport 2, which is like an answer to, it's like the square, it's more square like Scotty Cameron. I'm not going to lie. As someone who has one of those putters and has used it in and out, I mean, I've only played, I think, 9 holes this year. So haven't used it yet. That thing's going back in the bag. Because I don't have the Hideki GSS Circle T made by Scotty Cameron putter. I don't have that one by any means. Have one an OTR, or as they say, off the rack version of the Select. Yeah, the Select Newport 2. Then for me, it's going in the bag because, well, Hideki won with it. Why would I not? I've always liked the look of that putter. I can think of, again, as someone who talked. Mentioned earlier, sticking with a style of putter. I've always liked that. I've got Answer 2s, got Newport 2s. My very first putter that was like a real, I want to call it my real putter, was an Oil Can 2 Newport 2. Newport 2 Oil Can, and it was the Art of Putting version. Now it had the oval cavity, which you can go online, you can dig it, go down the deep hole of like Scotty Cameron putters. And at one point I owned 3 of them because I mean, now they're very hard. They're a lot harder to find in a good condition. And when they are, they're much more expensive than when I bought them or when I bought a couple of them. And so it's always been a look that I really liked. Slightly thinner top line. I like the square bumpers. I don't always like a sight line. That's the one thing. I mean, I've taken the paint out of the one I have. If it was up to me, I would have one of those style putters without it. I do have putters that are like that style that don't have that sight line. I don't like one generally, but I don't really have the ability to just, you know, get one of those styles of putters, you know, custom ordered from Scotty Cameron, slightly out of my price range. And no one's, after seeing my putting most of the time, no one's going to just, you know, no one's reeling up saying, Ryan, you'd be a great endorser for one of these things. So I've always liked that style, like that it's a little more square, but I've also used the flow neck, you know, like a TP Mills, or there's the, I'm trying to think of what my other one is. But anyways, that like toe up style, flowing back. I know Ben already has one called the Fred Couples blade. That style, I've always loved that style of blade. I've used an Amola 8, which is like an old AGSI Plus TaylorMade putter. Yeah, going down deep rabbit hole of like all the putters that I've used. But anyways, I'm very excited to put that putter back in the bag. Just watching Hideki win, I'm like, okay, confidence booster. This kind of putter won the Masters. I'm going to go out there and use it as well. And last but not least, we got to talk about the golf ball. Golf ball was the Srixon, the Z-Star XV. Everyone's using Zed. Throws off the Canadians. I remember talking to this with Chris Vachal from Mizuno. He's like, yeah, we get the Z on the driver. He goes, yeah, you know what, you call it Zed. So like it comes into a play when like we're talking about marketing and all these different things. But, you know, we'll get over it. We're used to calling it Z. Where people are, you know, us Canucks are used to figuring different things out in other languages. Although we spell color different as well. We can't forget that. We have a U in it. I don't know if that's the British version of way of spelling, but no, it's not C-O-L-O-R. Now I'm doing English lessons here for some reason. Or would it be English? Yeah, I guess technically it's writing, I guess. Anyways, I'm digressing hugely here. I haven't even had a car analogy yet. But again, this is a very exciting Masters to watch. And again, as people always say, it didn't start till the back nine on Sunday. We saw the big lead. It never really went away. But that's what Augusta gives you. It's going to give and take. Right, and that's what makes it so wonderful. And to kind of finish this off, I just want to talk a little bit about the golf course. I already talked about his bag, which I think is great. Like it's very fascinating to see, especially how heavy he plays those driver shafts and fairway shafts. A lot of players have gone lighter to get that speed. For him, it's a tempo thing. He prefers the heavier. But that's not always the case. A lot of times when people are generally slower with their tempo, we suggest lighter weight. But most people who are slower with their tempo aren't swinging their driver like 115, 120 miles an hour. So we have to keep that in the top of our mind there. So again, let's talk about the golf course. Monday, U.S. Open broke out. Now that was the joke, at least I saw on social media. And Justin Rose, I think was 65, brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. And you had firm and fast conditions around the greens. Especially with the undulation, you're going to see a lot of roll. As I said many times before, golf ball rolling is very exciting. It's not when it lands next to the hole and just stops. It's kind of boring, right? The further it rolls away from the hole, you're like, okay, when is this going to go? Where is it going to stop? And that makes for great entertainment. Now, we saw that as well. We got some of the fire, quote-unquote fire, taken out of it after the rain on Saturday. But we still saw a lot of roll. And this is where when you talk about you can talk about gapping. You can talk about knowing your dispersion, knowing your shot shape, feeling very confident in hitting your shot shape. Around the golf course, it is going to force you to hit certain shots more often. Now, you can play a stock shot shape if you want, and you can be very successful doing it. But it makes you want to see it. And I talked about it with our pregame show about Bubba Watson. Bubba Watson works the golf ball both ways pretty easily. And for him, being a very visual player, he likes to see it move both ways. He doesn't see a straight shot. He sees everything goes right and left and right and left and right and left. And, you know, it makes you want the way they tuck pins, the way the greens are shaped, the way the fairways are angled. You look at it and say to yourself, like, okay, it wants me to hit this shot. It makes it easier if I try and hit this shot. Because when it is fast, approaching from a certain angle or approaching from a different side of the green gives you more green to work with, or if you happen to miss one, left less green to work with, or you can hit it really close and give yourself, quote unquote, an easier, closer shot, but now you have a tougher angle. All of these things factor in. And one of the telltale signs of this, and I got this kind of tip from, because I never really thought about it before, was from Andy Johnson, the fried egg. Was you see scorecard and scoreboard separation at the top. And we saw that. Like if you go through the top 10, it gets close to even par very quickly outside of those top players. And that's on a tournament with some of the best players in the world. Because of what it does, it separates the great shots and the bad, and the bad shots become exponentially worse. You look at Xander on 16 on Sunday. Everyone knows that pin. Everyone knows what's going to happen. He took it right online and missed by a couple feet. He missed by a couple feet to the right. It would have been on the green. I think that's an uphill putt. That's an uphill putt from there. Going up the hill gives himself a chance for birdie. And instead, it goes in the water, has to go to the drop, makes a triple, right? That shot was so close to being so good. But when you go after it and you're forcing, great architecture, great golf holes are going to give you the opportunity, if you can, to get a close and make that putt. but it's also going to just completely punish you if you miss it. And, you know, Hideki made a four. He had the three putt, right? But he gave himself the opportunity to make that three. He missed the short putt. But it was still there because he took the really big number completely out of play. Xander went for it, just a couple shots behind, had to do it, and didn't come out the winner in that case. And we see that. You see that over and over and over again as players miss and hit shots around greens because you see the ball roll away. You saw it earlier when I said Justin Rose on six on Saturday, where I think Leishman did two. He hit a great putt today, actually. But to be able to get the shot up the hill, to get to that point, it takes a lot of guts to go from that and hit it that hard. Because you bring a three putt into play very quickly. But it's also because you didn't put it on the right level. It's asking you to hit a shot with a mid iron, which is still, I mean, for most, I would say amateur golfers are not hitting short irons close to 165, 170 yards. But for them, that's what it is. And the shot calls for that, to hit it there or, you know, get rejected essentially. And I don't know if it wasn't six. I'm trying to think the hole, like blanking. But there's the par three where the pin was like right at the front over the bunker. Now, if you go for it, yes, you can put it close. We're talking like 3 yards and you're in sand. And, you know, that's where Augusta National and great architecture separates those players. So you have to think about that. Next time you're watching a tournament and you watch people talk about deep rough and people talk about growing up the rough and making it thick and all this stuff, watch where they put it. Because when players miss, even if you miss by 5 feet and it goes in the rough, that's it. You miss by 5 feet. It stops where it is. And it's the stock, get out to 60, hack it on the green, get it close. And they hit the shot so often that they're really good at it. And again, they're the best players in the world. So, you know, to give them a relatively simple, straightforward pitch shot from heavy rough is not overly difficult over and over again. But to give them a shot off a very tight lie where you only missed by 10 feet and now you're 40 feet away or 50 feet away, first of all, it's frustrating. Way more frustrating, I think, in a lot of cases than just missing it and having to hit that like little pitch shot. But the risk when you miss the next one, just like with Justin Rose's putt, is big. Really big. Because now, okay, you can play for the bogey, you can play it safer, you can play away from, you know, going back and attacking the hole and go try and make your two putt from a longer distance away, that's fine. But if you're trying to make your par back and you go after it, well, if you come up short or you be too aggressive, it goes long. I'm thinking of the 15, right, behind the green there. If it goes long, you can put it back in the water again. And now you're talking, okay, it went from whatever, 3-shot lead at that point to, or 4-shot lead to nothing, to potentially becoming further back. And that's what you always will see with golf courses that have great architecture that make you think. So when you're watching golf next time, think about that. And, you know, you get familiarity with Augusta National, and that's why people enjoy watching it. I know people that don't always watch golf, but they're familiar with the holes, they're familiar with the pin locations, all of those things, because we get to see it year after year. And to see it back in April after having it in, I guess, November last year was exciting. I know I loved it. And the only sad thing is now we got to wait a whole nother year for it to happen again. But congratulations to Hideki Matsuyama. It was a brilliant victory on so many levels. And that's our show for this week. I hope you enjoyed it. Like, I feel like it's so hard to put 4 days of exciting golf where I was just completely locked in into like 40 minutes. That's what it feels like. I feel like I was all over the place. But I wanted to break down Hideki's bag. I want to talk about the golf course because we did see that scoreboard separation, which is very exciting, and to see what it meant. I think, you know, a lot of people, we don't see a lot of emotion from Hideki all the time. You saw him get teary-eyed off the 18th there because you know what it meant to how hard he's worked to get to that point. And it's not just him. A lot of players go through that process of like, I wouldn't say that he struggled, but like to work so hard towards something and to build and have great victories in the past and to be the low amateur there at one point and to be a winner 10 years later. It's pretty cool to see. And I certainly enjoyed it. I hope you enjoyed it too. And I hope you enjoyed this week's show. So if you liked it, Remember, give us the old thumbs up, the rating on wherever you happen to listen to your podcast. Okay, if you have questions, reach out. RDS Brath, Instagram, Twitter, and OnSpecWRX. I'm happy to answer your questions. I do it every week. I did a question and answer this week. Went live instead, but this coming week, we will go back to the standard. You ask the questions, I answer them in Instagram stories because I'm here to help. The show's about education. The show's about being fun. And as always, thanks for listening.